You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 3rd of August, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAryan.com. As it's Friday, of course, we're joined by the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victors of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today? Hot, isn't it?
Well, it comes round fast, doesn't it, Friday?
It does, it does. The year's flying by.
Yeah, okay.
I tell you, the year is flying by, and this has got to be the hottest that we've had since at least the 70s, I think. Roasting. Listeners don't realise we have to switch our fans off when we're actually recording these podcasts, so we end up in a collapsing in a pool of sweat by the end of the podcast. Dennis, are you still there, or are you muted?
I am muted, yeah. Sorry about that. I haven't seen much of the weather myself. Like, in fact, I was thinking the other day, actually, I've been actually researching nearly every day since 2011. Can you believe that one? And that includes Christmas.
I can believe it, funnily enough. I can believe it with the amount of videos you put out. Yes, I do believe you put the work in. I know you put the work in, and we put some work in for today's podcast as well. We're going to look back over the series from chapter 6 onwards. That's where we got up to last week. So we're going to have a recap of it, and we're also going to check out a few comments as well. And we'll begin with a couple of comments, I think. We've got a couple of comments that are addressed to you, Dennis. And I forget who this actually was, but it seems to have been asked of you quite a few times. And that is just to get your views on flat Earth. Is there a conspiracy? Is the Earth really flat? What are your views on it, Dennis?
Well, to be honest, I don't like to bring the subject up because I think it's a divisive subject, and I think there's a lot more credible people who know more about it than I do. Having said that, you know, my usual answer, if people do ask me, is that knowing the agenda of the Freemasons and the lies that I feel they've told us, then it would not surprise me if it was. But other than that, I don't go any further because it's a divisive subject. It doesn't really cure any ills, as far as I can see. You know, maybe it does in other areas, but the particular area that I'm in, like, you know, this world revolution. You know, I think the United Nations flag is another subject which, you know, needs looking into because they don't even have the Antarctica on there, believe it or not. It's a flat Earth with no Antarctica. And of course, down there, you're not allowed to go any distance into Antarctica before you get accosted by military police.
I wasn't aware of that with the flag, but I do agree with you. It is fairly divisive. And besides that, I think, you know, it's one of these subjects that, you know, if we're trying to show things that there is lots of concrete proof for, that people can check out for themselves, and then we start saying, oh, well, the Earth might be flat, or there might be nuclear weapons might not be real. They're sort of subjects that are red flags to people, and they think, well he's gone a little bit over the edge. He's believing anything that he's being told now. So I think, they are credible. They are credible theories. I mean, it could be true. We know that we're lied to. If we can be lied to at the scale of the Holocaust, then we could be lied. Anything's possible, really. I think that's where we have to look at it. But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really help the cause, does it? It doesn't promote nationalism.
Not really, no. Not that I'm aware of, anyway. So, you know.
It's not going to stop white genocide, is it?
No.
We're not going to fall off. That's the important thing. So long as we don't fall off, we'll be okay. Okay, well, we've got another comment from Cali115. She says, Dennis, I'm thinking about creating YouTube videos and I wanted to know, how do you do scrolling text?
Yeah, I can remember this question. I actually asked what software she uses or he uses and came back and I never heard of the software So it would probably be totally different to Adobe, what I use. So I suggested really going on YouTube because I find that there's hardly anything YouTube doesn't cover. And they have a lot of these educational, even I go on sometimes just to check out things. So that was my advice, was to try and find it on YouTube and have a listen to the video.
Yeah, we don't very often talk about the technical side of your videos, what goes into all of that. I mean, I don't know anything about it at all. I don't make videos. I just do the audio side of things. Maybe that's a problem a lot of people have, is trying to work out how to make scrolling text. I don't know. But,
not easy. I mean, when I first started using Adobe, because I'd used it on Coming In By The Back Door, it took me a while to find out where everything were. So that increased the time load, you know.
Is that the one that you would recommend people use, Adobe?
Well, I'm quite happy with it. I suppose you can go even more, you know, you can go a little bit higher again, but I was happy with it. And if I'm happy with something, then, you know, I'm happy.
Is that one of the ones that you have to pay for, or is that free technology?
Well, it's free where I get it from.
Good man. Good man. Okay, that's what we like to hear. You using their tools against them, right? Well, exactly. let's get back into the series then, Dennis. We're on to chapter 6, and this is when we first heard about the Mexican Revolution. So, tell us about the Mexican Revolution and how you heard about it and what was so important about it.
Yeah, well, interesting. Well, since we started this last week, I was thinking when I get around to doing the final episode, it's going to be the conclusions, what I came to after, you know, finishing the documentary. And there's some significant finds, and this was one of them, because even though I'm Roman Catholic myself, and I've heard many Roman Catholic people talking on YouTube at various times, I never heard that what went on in Mexico, which I always regarded as a Catholic country. But apparently that wasn't the case for 3 years when the Freemasons or Communists, whatever the Cali government described itself as, it certainly wasn't a religious government, and did everything in its power to execute Catholics, execute priests, and drive religion out of Mexico. And consequently, the peasants of Mexico rose up, the Cristeros, Viva Cristo Rey was their cry, which was along with Jesus Christ. And at the end of the day, it was a fascinating story, which again had been blacked out by our loving media.
Well, it would seem that what they've done now is they've co-opted Christianity. Isn't Pope Francis, doesn't he come from Mexico or Argentina or that
Argentina,
sort of area?
Yeah.
And some doctrine that they came up with, which was sort of crossing Christianity with communism. That came out of that area as well.
Yeah, right? There's a photograph of Jesus on the cross, which was inverted onto a hammer and sickle, which was as sick as it gets.
I think they called it liberation theology, they call it?
I called it someone else.
I thought you might. Well, I've got some quotes just from Wikipedia that just explain this.
Can I just say before you go into that, a lot of people wonder why the Pope resigned and Francis came in, you know, because he wasn't ill, and people wondered. And my own theory is he was pushed to bring Francis in to pick up the baton of the New World Order, and hence we are what he says we are today, clueless.
Well, I can remember the one before Francis, and, you know, we really didn't think that much of him.
No.
We certainly didn't think of him as being, you know, right-wing or nationalist or far-right, and yet that's the way he seems to be portrayed now with Francis. The media love Francis, don't they? They were never too keen on the one before.
We know what the media is, don't we?
Yeah, well, that's just it. I mean, as soon as the media started trumpeting about how great Francis was, you know, you sort of knew that he was going to be really wicked.
Yeah.
He was going to be really evil. Yeah. Well, I've got these quotes from Wikipedia, which talk about this time, because you mentioned the Mexican Constitution as well and something that was in that. In this Wikipedia bit, it says many scholars consider the promulgation of the Mexican Constitution of 1917 as the end point of the armed conflict. Economic and social conditions improved in accordance with revolutionary policies, so that the new society took shape within a framework of official revolutionary institutions, with the Constitution providing that framework. The period 1920 to 1940 is often considered to be a phase of the revolution, as government power was consolidated and the Catholic clergy and institutions were attacked in the 1920s, and the revolutionary constitution of 1917 was implemented. Now, there was something in that constitution, wasn't there, about banning the church entirely, and that's still on the books or something, I seem to remember?
Yeah, it's very similar to the Noir laws, which Bush signed, which are actually the laws would have been passed but have not yet been activated. But this one here in Mexico was activated, and all hell broke loose. A war actually did break out. Threw up a leader, a general who wasn't, well, he has been demonized since, obviously, they always are. He led the peasants to practically to a victory, but they kind of came to an agreement. He was killed 3 weeks, I think, before he signed a peace treaty, where these laws were put back on the shelf again. But that's not to say they won't be brought into play at a later date. That was the general.
What were they exactly? Was it just the banning of the church outright, or killing the priests, or what was it that was in the Constitution?
Oh, yeah, well, it was death sentence was carried for anybody holding mass, wearing the priest's garments, and anybody attending. Death sentence.
So it's the same as what they had in the USSR, wasn't it? It's the same as what the Soviets did, killing the priests.
Yeah, well, I found out that the Mexican Revolution was being funded by the US bankers. That wasn't a problem. When they did the Spanish Revolution, they put the funds through Stalin, so the bankers stayed clean, and Stalin was the one who was supposed to be funding them. And Mexico, actually, as well.
So it's these bankers that are behind these revolutions, really, isn't it? They're behind all of them.
Yeah, well, yeah. This is another finding in this documentary, whereas most people like myself and probably you went to school and learned about certain revolutions and wars and thought that they were all singular events, you know, just happening at that time. Where really, it's the world revolution, which these Jews shouted out when they tried to take Germany over, when being executed, they would shout out, "Long live the world revolution." And that's exactly what it is. This is a world revolution, different parts of the world, continues into the Middle East after World War II.
We're always told that somebody wants to take over the world, or somebody invaded some other country, or some politician suddenly went mad. We're never actually told that what it's all about, really, is the economy and these bankers that want their money, and they want their slice of it. They want to be controlling things.
What annoys me about the bankers then is that they were quite prepared to have Stalin roll into Europe with his massive army and million paratroopers and create in 1941, which would have been even worse than what came in 1944. And these bankers, you know, are just walking around. Well, they even crashed the economy and walked around free. So it's untouchable in many ways.
Well, it's good that you're exposing them all, and the fact that there are links between them, because they try to put them across as if they're all separate, as if they're separate issues. Yes. It's the same as with the news today, when we hear of what's going on, it's put across as separate issues. You know, there's no link between North Korea, Iran, Libya, Syria. They're just rogue states. So don't say that, well, each one of them doesn't have a central bank. Yeah, that's the connecting issue.
Exactly. Well, that goes with it. That's another thing I found out as well. Because although we physically showed that we lost the British Empire, we didn't lose it because we had central banks in all our countries.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? There's been no change really with the banking system in India, and you know that was the point of the British Empire, was to set up these banking systems, and once they had them, of course they don't care what it's called. so long as they've got that system or what puppet is running it. Well, I've got some more from Wikipedia.
I think the four countries short, by the way. I think the four countries short have taken over the complete world. Yeah, I think so.
Which one are those?
I think it's Iran, Cuba, Syria, and North Korea.
You know, the amazing thing about Syria, before it went into this destabilization, it had billions of dollars in sovereign wealth. It didn't have any debt. Billions of dollars in foreign funds that the country had managed to make just out of the work, out of the people working in that country. Every other country has debt and ends up borrowing money to pay for the budget. And that's the way the system goes. And yet, at the beginning of that war, they had billions. And I dare say it's all been spent now on this war. Same with Libya. Yeah, well, he was going to bring in a gold dinar, wasn't he, and get rid of the dollar and start an African bank. Lending money to the Africans so that the World Bank didn't have to lend it to them.
Well, that's a no-no, isn't it?
Yeah, you just imagine the way the world would be if Gaddafi was still alive. I mean, that was a real pivotal point, wasn't it, when they took him out?
Definitely, yeah. I've seen photos of early meetings with Sarkozy and Cameron and Obama, all shaking his hand, Blair, welcoming to these meetings, whatever. And there they all are, knives in his back.
Well, you think of the invasion of Europe that's taken place since then. Millions of Negroes.
That he warned that, didn't he, Gaddafi?
Yeah, that have used Libya for invading. And you think once they got those Islamists together in Libya, they had a country there that they had as a base, and they could then head off to Syria and Iraq. And they've still got...
And today, 5 years now, something like that, they still haven't got a government. There's two factions. I think one's in... Tikrit is one, and one of the cities... There's two separate governments fighting for control, even today.
Incredible. And according to America, this is good. It's stable now. We're bringing stability to these Muslim countries.
He died.
Yeah. Sickening, wasn't it? Hillary Clinton, really that cackle. Yeah. I couldn't believe that, the way she was just cackling about the brutal murder of a world leader. And she's laughing and cackling. Obviously got no real concept of how that would look to the rest of the world.
I've just remembered, right? I saw 2 years before a video the other day of her welcoming Gaddafi's son to the United States. And 2 years later, he was dead, blood on her hands. And she was there, it's great to have Mr. Gaddafi, his son with us and all this. It was so blatant.
You know, it's rare that you get Negroes or Arabs that, care so much for their people that they come out with a social system for them and a form of nationalism. And Gaddafi did all of that. He was, probably the greatest son of Africa there has ever been, I would say.
Yeah. I would say. When he's saying, I will ouse every Libyan before I ouse my father, and he did exactly what he said, not the guy.
He wanted to send out search parties into Europe to bring the blacks back to Africa as well. He said they can't be liking it in Europe. They can't be liking that weather. They should come back to Africa. And I'm going to make Africa a good place to live. And we want to tell them that and bring them back. That's what Gaddafi was. With that Lockerbie thing, I mean, that was shown that wasn't actually to do with him. All set up. And the shootings, of the police outside the Libyan embassy, like it was a setup as well. It's very, very similar to what they're doing to Bashar al-Assad today.
It's a communist thing because, as I said, the neocons are Trotskyites. So it's continuing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've got another paragraph here from Wikipedia that I think is pertinent. It says, this armed conflict is often characterized as the most important socio-political event in Mexico and one of the greatest upheavals of the 20th century. It resulted in an important program of experimentation and reform in social organization. The revolution committed the resulting political regime with social justice until Mexico underwent a neoliberal reform process that started in the 1980s. So that was really, you know, social justice warriors and communism. That's admitting it, isn't it? That's what it was.
But why hide it from the world?
Experimentation and reform in social justice. And look at what went on there. And again, you've got the social justice warriors today saying that communism hasn't been properly tried yet. And saying that's what we need today. All you have to do is look back at what happened in these revolutions, at the massacres that went on, and then, you know, the poverty that happened afterwards. Nowhere has it ever been a success.
The one common denominator with that I found were you always found a pile of about 6,000-7,000 Catholic priests dead.
Well, that was the link that you discovered, really, wasn't it? Because we knew they'd been dead, we knew it was Christians, but specifically Catholic priests is specifically what
that's right.
After.
Yeah, always Catholic. I mean, certainly they did the Orthodox Christianity in Soviet Union, but you know, it was always the Catholic Church what seemed to be at the brunt of it.
Well, they were the ones really exposing the Freemasons, weren't they?
Yeah, throughout history, yeah. I mean, at times it had been infiltrated and it gets accused of being Masonic itself, which it is at this present time. But I was looking into that not long back, and I think they believed, the Catholic Church believed, that at one point Freemasonry was Christian before it was taken over by the Illuminati and Wiseout. That's what they think.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, I would suggest it's probably always been a secret society. No, we don't need secret societies.
Don't need them.
Right, well, let's move on to Chapter 7. And this is where you started looking into black magic in Freemasonry and also the building of the Pentagon. I think this is the one where you brought in a bit of this weather magic as well. There's quite a lot in this episode. So let's start with the black magic in Freemasonry. What was that about?
Well, it's very similar. Black magic has always been associated in some way with Freemasonry. There's always been rumours about it, you know. Just like paedophilia, which what amuses me today is that you get a lot of Catholic priests are always getting caught, obviously, because the Freemasons have infiltrated the church. We never get any lodges raided. Freemasons got in the lodges. So this is a similar type of thing to black magic. And it's one of those subjects where I can be easily criticised, because there are some people who, I mean, my wife's one of them, who just does not believe in magic, just thinks it's tricks of the mind or slice of the hand or whatever. But I tend to think there's good and evil in this world, and that reading on Crowley and one or two others, I always had the feeling that they've managed to invoke the spirits, which have given them strength in many ways. You know, certainly as we went further into it, we saw even more evidence. But they've always kept a distance, if you like. So what they did were, they had Masonic writers like Pike and Edward Way to the Book of Black Magic, and especially Manly P. Hall, Crowley was another one, obviously, who wrote the books, but they were then recommended by the top Freemasons, you know, the Scottish Rite. So they kept that little bit of a distance themselves. You couldn't actually accuse them, but, you know, there's one or two books that obviously they did put the name to in recommending them, which is no different, really.
Well, I think, you know, you've got the perfect excuse there. If people don't actually believe in magic, then, you know, it can't be proved that you had anything to do with something. You know, you could be using magic to get up to all sorts of nefarious acts, killing people and giving people sicknesses and illness and winning things with black magic, basically, and nobody's going to be suspecting you. They're going to say, oh, no, it can't possibly be him. You know, it couldn't possibly be him. You'd have to believe in magic to think that it was him.
Well, I opened up that particular episode with Christopher Lee, who's quite a respected actor, you know what I mean? And when asked about black magic, he went on a real rant to say, of course it's right, you know, and rhymed off the various left-hand paths, etc., which, you know, he quoted. And I also had a picture of a young girl with horns and a blindfold at the Bohemian Grove, which is very similar to the, there was a series out with a similar Chicago thing of these detectives hunting these satanic killers. And in the first series, I think they found a young girl under a tree with antler horns. So I tied them both together because obviously the Bohemian Grove has ties to the occult as well. So, you know, it worked as far as I was concerned. I didn't really get any real criticism about it because it went on, rather than source it later, this kind of developed as it went along and sourced itself.
Well, if you're looking at magic itself, I mean, what you're thinking about is trying to influence people. And what is Hollywood? What are movies? You know, movie magic, yeah. Ways to influence people. And if you look at what we had as technology years ago, what we have as technology today would be looked at as magic. I mean, a lot of science is based on magic and based on alchemy. A lot of today's science, yeah. If you look at what, Dr. E. Michael Jones talks about, I mean, even economics is based on this Pythagorean stuff and all this neo-Hermetic ideas, and all of that came out in today's science. And this is why, you know, everything is materialistic now. There's no spiritual side to it because of this magical influence, I think. And because a lot of the time, go on.
In coming in by the back door, I touched on it because I did a thing on Freemasonry in the music business and also in Hollywood. Well, in the music business, where, you had the Negroes down in the South had brought over this from Africa, this voodoo. And also, you know, you had these people going to the crossroads and asking for the devil for, you know, to sell the soul and did have a great talent. Which has continued on throughout the years. And in the movie business, he actually had, I think it was Denzel Washington turning around and actually saying on film, he couldn't have done Glory, he said, without this demon. And he actually got an Oscar for it. And he's saying he couldn't have done it without this demon. So it was just a continuation of that, really.
Well, it has a lot of power over people, doesn't it? Particularly if you look if you look at the Negroes, and the ones that they smuggle over to bring into Europe, they do rituals with them beforehand, and they're absolutely terrified. You know, they won't run away from the guy that smuggled them over, because if they do, that's it. You know, they'll die a horrible, painful death, and they'll be possessed by demons, and they believe in all of this. And they take it all very, very seriously. The power of, you know, you can say, well, I don't believe in it, but the people that do believe in
it has dismissing it.
Massive power over them. You know, they're absolutely terrified that, you know, of actually breaking away from them because of what they will do. And it's, it's their belief in magic that does all of that. So how does the building of the Pentagon fit in with the magical side of it?
Well, right at the end of that particular part where I'd gone through one or two books, one of the, Manly Hall actually said, if he truly is a master and he's then in communication with the unseen powers that move the destinies of life. And I put that quote in purposely because obviously Roosevelt was a 32nd degree Freemason. If he knew anything about, this side of Freemasonry, which he obviously did, then, you know, he has the unseen powers that move the destinies of life, which translated into the German army, one of the greatest armies ever seen, being halted at the gates of Moscow by the weather, and then pushed back by the Russians, who couldn't defeat Finland not 12 months before.
Well, they've always used clairvoyance as well, didn't they? Especially during the war. I mean, on Britain's side, they had druids and witches that were working for Churchill that were casting spells. Yeah. And before then, we had clairvoyance trying to tell what was happening on the continent. I know we'll talk about him in a later episode, John Dee. And he was talking to the angels and getting information from them about what was happening all across Europe from these spirits. So it really wouldn't surprise me. You know, they would be foolish not to look into that if you're fighting a war. You know, you want to be fighting a war on all fronts, and they would be foolish not to look into fighting a war also using magic as well, when you think about it. If you think the other side is going to be doing that, especially if they've got knowledge on this and information on this, and if they're all involved in Freemasonry, then they've got all the rituals and all the things that you would need to do. They've got all that information there. They'd be able to do it.
Yeah, well, that book by Manly P. Hall actually shows you how to raise a demon. You know, gives you the word and everything.
And if they want to kidnap people and drain them of their blood and what have you, you know, they can do that. They're the establishment. You know, they're not going to get you know, they're not going to get held to account over it. And if they've got Jews advising them.
Well, yeah, but there are some people who just can't accept it. There's just a wall there. I found this when I was doing comedies by the back door, and I even found it from a couple of comics in this, you know, where it's just, now this is getting crazy type of thing. But there's too much smoke not to be a fire.
Well, this is the thing. People think that it's crazy when you say that the Jews used to sacrifice little Christian boys and they used to drain them of their blood. And people say, well, that's absolutely crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Which it is,
but they did. You know, they were tried in all these different courts, you know, the top courts of the land, and the courts didn't want to find them guilty because they were the king's Jews. You know, the king owned these people. They were the hardest people of the lot to actually get to court and win a court case against them, and yet they did. And the Catholic Church did an investigation into it. I've discovered the other day, a couple of hundred years back, the Catholic Church did an investigation into all of these court cases. And they said, you know, they stopped people from saying that it's a libel because it wasn't a libel. It was a fact. And they had to make a thing saying, look, this is a fact. You cannot dispute it. It went through all these court cases, and it didn't just happen in one country. It happened all across Europe, and it happened right the way across the last 2,000 years. So it did happen.
Yeah, there's evidence of when they killed a certain kid anyway, you know, he had holes in him, which were, you know, adjacent to the Talmud markings, which all to do with getting the homeland of Israel. And you could see the holes were put in a certain place in this kid. And, you know, it's undeniable, and the Jews will deny it, obviously, but not deny.
Well, that's how they know that it's Jewish ritual murder is because of the way that the ritual is done, because of where the puncture wounds are. But there were cases, I think it might have been Simon of Trent, there were cases where Jews confessed and, you know, they gave all the details of the ritual that was gone through, and there was no way that they could have known anything about this unless it was for real, because they didn't know where the puncture wounds were. They didn't know how the body had been found. They didn't know what had been done to the body. And yet these Jews were able to give precise descriptions of what this ritual entailed. And there was even a market for this blood of the blood that was drained of Christian children. They would dry the blood out, and then they would put them in these leather pouches, and then these leather pouches they would sell for magic, because the Jews were, you know, they were looked at almost like today. A lot of Jews are still doctors, and sometimes people would go to these Jews for cures and what have you, and these Jews would use this blood for that. They would use it for all sorts of things. It was very central. Very, very, very central to them. And yet today they screech about, oh, it's a blood libel. It's never, ever been found to be a libel. It was always found to be fact, and these Jews were found to be guilty. You know, I really don't know how it could ever stand up in court with the Jews saying that was a blood libel, when all the courts in Europe found, you know, that they were guilty.
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of kids going, I think he said, is it one every 40 minutes in America a child goes missing?
And the synagogue is where people should be going to look for them.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. They used to, didn't they? Dig them up under the ground.
Now, as the first
what
place to
was
look.
Interesting with this was the fact that he built the Pentagon. I mean, you saw the other week I did an episode with all the newspaper headlines. He was desperate to get into this war. And this would built to the megalithic exact measurements of the Stonehenge.
So it was built to occult measurements.
Yeah.
Built to building. Esoteric measurements. It was rushed forwards to get it finished in time for the end of the war. And just as it was finished, month after or a week later, basically at the same time, suddenly there's freak weather conditions in Russia and Hitler loses. And you've got this.
Yeah, I think I got it wrong. I've made an error with that. I've changed it since it were 1942 when they finished it, not 1941. I were in 1943. Can't remember one or the other, but I was a year early. I was right in one part of the episode, but I was wrong with a headline. It should have read a year later. But having said that, things did start to go wrong because, as I mentioned, Hitler had gone to the Reichstag to report on the war, and everything was going to plan, and he even said they were crushed, never rise again. So something went sadly wrong, because he wouldn't have said that without actually, saying for real.
Well, the Pentagon itself is like a pentagram, isn't it? So you've got...
it's shaped of course, isn't it?
What's the word for it? Arcane symbol? I forget what the word is. Geomancy? To do with the earth, isn't it? Something to do with these shapes, these occult shapes, and the power that these occult shapes have.
Yeah, well, the pentagon is an occult shape, isn't it? The actual pentagon, not the building of the, but the pentagon itself. And not only that, the ley line went straight through the towers as well, which, hello. Eventually so fell.
Built on a place of power and built to a certain shape to accentuate that power. And the opposite of that is the cathedrals that we have. I mean, they're built to sacred geometry, sacred measurements and ratios between it all. And they're built in sacred spots that have always been known to be sacred to us. And they're built so that they accentuate and amplify the choiral voices and send them off up to the heavens. Like when you have that spire with the bell at the top and all the energy goes straight up to the top, like up the top of the spine and sets off this bell. And that's the opposite of it. That's positive energy.
Correct. Yeah.
And then you've got the evil energy, which is things like the Pentagon and these ugly buildings, I would suggest as well. These ugly monstrosities that they build that are the opposite of what beautiful architecture should be about.
Oh, ugly. Ugly.
Squashing lots of people, one on top of the other.
Confirm this. Block of flats. The construction of the Pentagon, which should have took 4 years, was completed in 16 months and was finished on the 15th of January, 1943. It was 1942 when Japan obviously struck Pearl Harbor and he got his backdoor wish to get in the war then.
So you were slightly out of that. Well, that's good of you to correct it, Dennis. Well, let's move on to part eight. Now, this was a really interesting one. This is when you brought up the Luciferian doctrine and how that was now being acknowledged, and also these bankers. Do you want to talk about that for a bit? And then I've got some quotes here we can use as well.
Well, you use a quote while I just dig it up if you like.
Okay, well, first off, we've got a comment from Deborah L, and she says, supposedly the Masons are Luciferians from the information we are told, and we are taught a lot of lies. However, there is no such thing as an entity named Lucifer. It's an adjective, and according to the Holy Bible, the word Lucifer in Isaiah is describing the king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar. So either the Masons are intentionally lying or just plain stupid. Well, I guess all the Luciferians must just be making it up. It can't all be real. Why are they calling themselves Luciferians if there's no such thing as Lucifer? I can understand what she's saying. Lucifer means light bringer, and that verse in Isaiah is talking about the king of Babylon. But this morning star, the illuminator, for years that's been identified with Satan, and the Luciferians do admit that Lucifer is Satan, or in fact they don't admit that, but then they use the word the adversary for Lucifer, which is what Satan means. So, you know, they do try to obfuscate things, but what they're talking about is illumination, and not illumination from God, but man illuminating himself.
Yeah, it all sends back to the garden. The thing is, though, when I mentioned coming in by the back door, again, a lot of people just thought, oh, going off the rails. But since then, 2-3 years maybe, you know, things have happened, and people, although the Luciferians haven't really come out and yet admitted that they're Luciferian, I think more people are beginning to understand that this is happening. And certainly the Dutch guy who was working for the bankers, he came out after they wanted to do child sacrifices. He refused to do it. It kind of messed him up. And he came out and he talked openly about there were certain people in this organization, which some were Roman Catholic, some were other religions, but he said a lot of them, in fact, most of them, were Luciferian.
Well, if we look at what Luciferianism involves, I think we will see that that's, you know, this is what the New World Order is promoting. And we know the United Nations, that has a library that was devoted to Lucifer, Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, that was dedicated to Lucifer, Blavatsky. She talks a lot about Lucifer, Aleister Crowley, the Masons. I mean, you've highlighted that in those books by those high-ranking Masons, they were saying that Lucifer is their real god, and that's who they look to. And this idea it's Gnosticism. It's the worship of the serpent. It's the worship of the one that lied to us and brought death into the world and told us that we could be gods. And it's still the same thing today. Luciferianism is about man becoming God himself, man making up his own laws, man being the ruler, the created being being the ruler rather than the creator that created the being. I've got a description of it here. This is from Wikipedia. Luciferianism is a belief system that venerates the essential characteristics that are affixed to Lucifer. The tradition, influenced by Gnosticism, usually reveres Lucifer not as the devil, but as a liberator, a guardian or guiding spirit, or even the true God, as opposed to Yahweh. So what it's really admitting there is that they view Satan as God. When they're saying they don't see Lucifer as the devil, but as a liberator, I mean, they are admitted this is the character that Christians know as the devil. They see as a liberator. They see him as being the good guy and the characteristics.
Templars brought that back as well.
Yeah.
Which is why the Catholic Church burnt them.
And they were worshipping a head, and they were buggering one another. Apparently they had a magic head that would talk to them.
Baphomet. The one with Baphomet with the breasts and half man, half woman.
There's a secret knowledge is basically what they're after. Why would you be after secret knowledge so that you could have one over on everybody else? And this is the temptation of Gnosticism. You have to be high intelligence to be able to understand it all. So it flatters you that you must be very, very clever to understand all of this, and everybody else must be very stupid. And this is what we see when people knock Christianity. It's fine. I can understand people knocking Christianity, the evangelical side of it, the modern Zio-Christian side of it. But it's actually real Christianity is very deep. But the people that are knocking it, and that think, well, Gnosticism is right, I've read these books and it's all about these secret interpretations, they're actually thinking that they're better than everybody else because they're saying, well, I know what it's really about.
Yeah, we're above you.
Yeah, and this is what it's really about. And you know, all this worrying about sin, that's for the people that aren't quite as clever as us. You know, we've got Gnosticism. We're the ones who really know. And it's just flattery. And that's exactly the same as, you know, eat of this apple and your eyes will be opened and you'll be like gods.
Right.
You know, saying you will be better than everyone else. You'll be like a god. And that brought death into the world. But I've also got some bits here from how that translates into the world around us, this idea of venerating the essential characteristics of Lucifer. And it says, Luciferians generally support the protection of the natural world. Well, that's because they worship the natural world. They worship the created thing rather than the creator. So you will see them getting involved in the Green Party and all that sort of thing, but you'll never see them speak up against miscegenation. Because what destroys God's real creation, they're quite happy for that. But they'll all be about worshipping the Earth Mother and, you know, saving the whale and more immigration and we love refugees. That as well. Both the arts and the sciences are crucial to human development and thus both are cherished. But again, it's not that the arts and the sciences are cherished. They're raised up to a level where they're more important than God. You know, science says there's no real difference between men and women, so why should we have any difference between them? There's no real difference between a mother and a father. They're both human beings. You know, why should we have to obey our traditions? They put science on a pedestal and believe that instead of believing God. So the worship of man's own creations. This is Lucifer.
Women out, of course, and bringing men down.
Sorry?
The building up women and bringing men down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely pushing the feminism thing. But again, that goes back to this worship of the goddess, doesn't it? I mean, what is a goddess? Well, that's bringing equality into religion.
Hasn't she brought a record? What's she called? Avalyn somebody or other. God is a woman.
Oh, I don't
know. I think of her second name. Yeah, well, it's a new record out. God is a woman.
But just saying, well, there's a goddess. That is equality, isn't it? That's feminism. God doesn't need a goddess.
Yep.
You know, the creator of all doesn't need a woman because he's everything, because he's God. I mean, if there was, if he had a goddess, then he wouldn't be God, would he? It's just equality.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just bringing equality into it. I never understand people that, you know, who claim to be nationalists, but they'll say, well, we're pagans and we honour the goddess. It's feminism. Bringing feminism into it. Luciferians think that humans should be focused on this life and how to make the most of it every single day. Oh, well, who can argue with that? Yes, of course you want to make the most of it every single day. But what they mean by that is that there's no afterlife and there's no judgment. Be focused on this life because there's not going to be any punishment for, you know, if you do wrong. Because later on it changes.
They'll sell the soul and, you know, payback is for eternity, you know, Lucifer has your soul.
Well, yeah, because they think this life is all that matters. You know, and they've been conned in thinking that because this life is corrupted. You know, there's evil in it. There's things that go wrong. There's death in it. So obviously this isn't all there is. Yeah, but the very fact that it is corrupted and that, you know, it's not perfect, that tells you that there is an afterlife. There has to be an afterlife because this one is all corrupted. It's not right. And yet these people have fallen for the idea that this is all that there is. So they want to make the most out of this. Whereas, you know, this isn't eternity and this will just be gone in the blink of an eye when you're in eternity.
Well, I know that trio are burning in hell at this present time. Sure, you know which trail I mean.
Which trail?
Churchill, Stalin, and Roosevelt.
Ah, right. Sometimes I do get stuck with your accent, Dennis. I'm good most of the time.
I apologise.
Nothing to apologise for. I mean, we all have these accents. It's real diversity. Real diversity. The ability to recognise both good and evil. To accept that all actions have both positive and negative consequences and to actively influence one's environment is a key factor. And again, this is covering this up. Well, of course you want to recognize good and evil, but what they're saying here is that, you know, nothing is all good and nothing is all evil. And it depends on the circumstances. So it's saying moral relativism. So, because we are now so advanced and progressive today, we can have gay marriage. Yeah. Because we are so much more progressed now. Well, no, that will always be evil. Sodomy will always be evil. And yet what they're saying is because we live in the current year, sodomy is absolutely fine. And that's Luciferian. Yep. It's saying that there's, you know, whether something is good or evil depends on the consequences. So you can see a lot of the way that we look at the world today and the way that we've been taught to look at the world today has its origin in this Luciferianism.
Yeah, sailing down that road, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's not all, you know, devil worship and, you know, human sacrifice. It's just the whole way that the world is being put forward to us today.
Well, it's a bit like Christian culture, because a mate of mine says, like, you know, he had no real belief in Christian religion, but then once he thought about it, after, you know, 6-7 months of deep thought, he realised that everyone really is a Christian because they live in the Christian culture. Whereas, you know, they grow up, the man meets wife, has a couple of kids. Whereas in Islam, he's like, man grows up, meets wife, has 19 kids and 3 wives outside. That's not a Christian culture. So, you know, that's what's been destroyed.
Well, another part of this is as well, is that they are actually accepting that Christianity is the way that the world is, because they're coming up with, you know, something that is based within that framework with Lucifer. And with Satan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So they are accepting that is the way that the world is. It's just that they've decided that they're going to, you know, support the adversary.
Yeah, which is what the Vatican is today, Church of Lucifer.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, the church has been infiltrated. But again, there's confusion between this, but people think the church is either the Catholic Church or it's the Orthodox Church. The church is the body of Christ. It's the true believers. That's what the church is. Right. So the church is still there. But the church as an establishment has been infiltrated and cuckolded, basically.
Hasn't it just?
Completely. Again, continuing with this, for Luciferians, enlightenment is the ultimate goal. Well, that is in this life, isn't it? So their ultimate goal is enlightenment in this life. Whereas, as I said, this world is corrupted. So any enlightenment that you have in this life is going to be flawed. It's going to be corrupted. It's not going to be... You know, the true light, the light of the black sun, which is what gives us life, because we can't see that because we're in a corrupted world. So anything that we think is that in this world is going to be fraudulent. It's going to be an imposter.
You know, and for years I was always arguing about the fact they would say that Adolf Hitler had a book of Blavatsky at his bedside every night. And obviously, you know, since have been proven right, but you know, many people believe that he believed in that. But how could Adolf Hitler believe in that when the offices of the Lucis Trust are in the United Nations today and preaching this Luciferian doctrine? It just didn't make sense to me then, and it obviously makes sense to me now.
Well, this is so much of it, isn't it? I mean, the pagan ideas, the Freemasonic ideas, the black magic ideas, they're all being carried out by the enemy. It's the enemy that has success through using them, not us. We don't have success by using them. The enemy does. You know, we're on the other side. We need to face up to that and have some self-discipline. Well, it also says the basic Luciferian principles highlight truth and freedom of will, worshipping the inner self and one's ultimate potential. So there you have it. You know, you've got, we're highlighting truth and freedom of will. What they mean by freedom of will is freedom to do whatever you like, regardless of how it affects other people, and worshipping the inner self. Worship yourself is what it teaches. Worship yourself and not who created you.
Traditional. Well, I can't worship myself without being a Freemason.
To be worshipping God. I mean, what is worship? Well, worshipping is studying and, you know, learning about and doing your best for. And you should be, if you're just doing that about yourself or learning about yourself, you're not going to learn anything new. You know, you want to be studying the Creator, worshipping the Creator, working for your nation, not working for yourself. I mean, this is the ultimate selfishness, really. Worshipping the inner self is selfish.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is where greed is good.
Okay, these are all extensions from this ideology, aren't they?
Correct.
That you can see around us in the world today. Traditional dogma is shunned as a basis for morality on the grounds that humans should not need deities or fear of eternal punishment to distinguish right from wrong and to do good. Again, this, you know, this sort of minimizes God and puts him into, he's just there to frighten people into doing the right thing. And that's not what religion is about. And
traditional
dogma has worked very well. You know, the idea of social shunning of people for breaking the laws of morality and you know, sort of getting pregnant out of wedlock and all that sort of thing, it worked very well. Worked very well for children. And what they're saying here is traditional morality, oh no, that should go out of the window because we only do that because we're scared of a God punishing us. That's Marxism. That's a Marxist idea.
Yeah.
Get rid of all of
that. Sad about Ireland as well, by the way. I never thought I'd see that day.
Very sad. What's happened over there? The abortions. Hopefully they're not. We won't have it in Northern Ireland, though. Northern Ireland will...
Oh, well, you know, it's proving to be a bastion, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. And I'll tell you, I'm really impressed with that pastor. I forget his name. There was a pastor, a Northern Ireland pastor, who wasn't a Catholic. He was but he was very, very noisy. Really annoyed, I can't remember his name. But his son is really, really good. He's really pro-Brexit, very conservative, against gay marriage.
Right. Yeah.
Excellent. I'm really impressed.
I think I'm really annoyed. I can picture the guy, but I can't think of his name.
Reverend Ian Paisley's son, Ian Paisley Jr. Yep. Yeah, he's brilliant. Really impressed with him. We hear more from him. Anyway, let's go back to this. All ideas should be tested before being accepted. And even then, one should remain sceptical because knowledge and understanding are fluid. Well, this is what's led to the legalization of gay marriage, because they say, what could go wrong? We need to test this.
I feel all about that one.
Yeah, it's like divorce. You know, we should make divorce easy. You know, what could go wrong with that? We'll only get a few divorces a year. We should test this. Why should we obey that? It's just a law that comes from this imaginary god that our ancestors followed. And as soon as you get rid of that law and allow people to just get divorced when they feel like it, you get masses of divorces. Half the country is now divorced and half the kids are being brought up without parents. And yet the people that changed the laws, they had no idea that was going to happen. They just thought, well, we can test this. We'll test this because we are so progressive and so much better now than our ancestors that we can do this. You see, all of this comes down to these Luciferian ideas, the way the world is today.
Plus the financial thing. I mean, when a couple get divorced, you know, automatically, you know, one has to then find a place to live and, you know, probably two jobs now where maybe just one job before, two sets of taxes. It's like, you know, the Jews are lapping it up. It's like they make money out of these things.
Oh, they make a fortune. They make a fortune out of it. It says here, regardless of whether Lucifer is conceived of as a deity or as a mere archetype, he is representation of ultimate knowledge and exploration, as well as humanity's savior and a champion for continuing personal growth. Well, he basically says you can do whatever you like. And what they're saying here is, you know, he's a savior. So they're positing him as, you know, this is the Jesus Christ that you can believe in that won't tell you to be self-disciplined, that won't tell you to, you know, hold back on your passions and not be selfish. You can do whatever you like if you're worshipping Satan.
Probably, yeah.
And then we got the left-hand path that they follow, which we've got, well, I think they went into in a later one. And, we got a couple of minutes left, so I'll go into this last bit.
Okay.
Luciferians will claim that Lucifer is not Satan. And as I said earlier, with this, you know, with this commenter that was saying there's no such thing as Lucifer, Lucifer isn't Satan. But if you look up their 11 Luciferian points of power, they talk of Lucifer as the adversary. And that's what Satan means. It means the adversary or the accuser. Mm-hmm. It's just a Hebrew word for it. So they are admitting that Lucifer is Satan. And I've got a couple of these points from their points of power. Number two, the symbol of the adversary is that of the self-liberator and spiritual rebel who inspires self-evolution. So again, it's liberation from obeying laws, liberation from morality, going against morality. Number six, the adversary represents rebellion with purpose, wisdom, strength, and power. But again, rebellion against tradition, rebellion against what is right. And number 11, to become a god is to fully understand that you possess the power to create and sustain your path in life and illuminate the life of self-determined potential. So the only way they can actually become gods is if they redefine what the word god means.
Isn't it really? In Hollywood, the series of Fallen Angels, and that carried on this point of view where the Fallen Angels were the good guys in the series. You know, crazy.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Everything's been it turns everything back to front. It puts it all in
upside down.
All this nice language, and you know that's how they push it onto people. It's the same as you know this idea of diversity is a strength. It's not. It's the end of the white race. It's the destruction of the white race.
Human rights. Well, John Cleese was leaving Britain to move to the Caribbean. He said England's not the same as what it used to be. But I can well remember the Monty Python series. It was more helpful to Marxism than not, to be quite honest. But he doesn't seem to understand what's gone wrong. But so he's shooting off to the Caribbean.
Yeah, sometimes he says some good things and sometimes he doesn't. But yeah, I think we've covered this Luciferian doctrine. You can see that is the way the world is. That is the way the EU pushes things. That's the new world order. So why would anyone that, you know, claims to be following nationalism get interested in anything like that? It's
like the Scottish nationalists. Yeah.
It's just temptation, isn't it? It's just temptation, flattering people. Anyway, we've got a little bit of time.
I'm sure there is, and people have been showing it, and they've jumped on the bandwagon, and I'm sure that's gone on.
Well, people get conned by Hollywood, don't they? And the Nazis were pagans, and the Nazis were black magic, and I think that plays into a lot of it. But it's just temptation, because it's an easy path. You know, you don't have to have self-discipline, do you? You can do whatever you like.
That's right.
That's what it boils down to.
Many anyway, good times, eh?
Yeah. Well, we've gone a little bit over. We've been enjoying ourselves so much, Dennis. So thank you very much for coming on. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And of course, we do hope you have a great weekend.
To Radio Aryan.